I'm Jordan.
And I'm Emmy.
And this is
Death in the Northwest.
A story where, a podcast where
we tell stories sometimes.
We tell stories.
All the time.
All the time.
And sometimes we sing songs and sometimes
make Schitt's Creek references.
And sometimes try to find love.
For Emmy.
Yeah. I have this sense he's gonna die young.
My boyfriend?
Yeah, I think he's gonna die in a car crash at like the age of like 52. I just have a premonition.
I hope not.
You can come live with me on my farm when it happens. But
okay.
Jordan, I'm just telling you.
I mean,
you.
We'll have like goats, horses, and children.
Yeah. Perfect.
Okay. Oh, I don't like this premonition.
It's just my spooky season premonition.
Okay.
I'm going to tell Alex. I'm going to be like, one of these. I'm going to be like, you get her for now, but.
One day I'll have her.
One day I'm going to have her, bitch. When she's old.
And your
chill,
children.
And will just do mushrooms with me on a farm all day long.
I won't do mushrooms with you on a farm all day long, but.
Sometimes.
I'll drink wine with you all day
perfect.
Long.
Done.
That's
done.
Where I'm.
Good.
That's what I'm about to
awesome.
Do. Yep.
Love it.
Well, we're drinking wine. It is a Thursday night. We're waiting for the election polls to come in, and I feel good.
I am too jaded at this point to think anything good is
that's
possibly
true.
Gonna happen.
That's true.
But I'm doing that on purpose because I don't want to get my hopes up.
Oh, my hopes are up. You know what I'm making on is.
He's playing with your hair. Oh, it's really cute.
Yeah, Salem.
Likes, oh, he loves your ponytail. He's biting. He's just chewing
on
it really hard.
He likes to chew
on my hair. Oh, that's cute.
I'm banking on AOC running next.
Oh, you think for 2024?
I don't know. Like, that'd be really cool.
That'd be great.
But I feel like she doesn't have enough experience under her belt, though.
I don't know. By then, she might. It's
maybe
4 years.
Who
and,
knows?
And frankly, we really need to stop electing 80-year-old
men
who are going to just die at the strong gust of
wind
comes through Washington, D.C.
Well, if they do die, if Biden does die, we get
Kamala Harris.
And that's better if Trump dies. Nobody wants
Pence. Nobody wants milquetoast Pence. Did you watch the new Borat movie?
Yeah, I did.
I will give you to Michael Penis. it's funny.
Yeah.
Okay.
What are you telling me this week? I know, okay, so the theme is female
killers
of the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. Or just the Northwest, because mine's not actually in the Pacific Northwest. Just
mine
like,
is, though. Yeah. Mine's in our own backyard,
our own state of Washington.
Yeah. So this is the Carnation Massacre.
I know this one.
It's creepy.
It is terrifying.
It's so terrifying. Like, this girl, the psychotic.
She cray.
So our story begins on Monday, December 24th, Christmas Eve.
Ooh, that's extra spooky.
2007. Around 5 p.m. that day, a phone call was made to 911. Mm-hmm. And the operator who received the call picked up, and they could only hear loud noises and possibly voices in the background, and then radio silence, nothing. So they thought, it's worth checking out. So
I would say so.
That evening, deputies responded to the call, and they found themselves at a heavily wooded property that was like protected by a gate and locked, and they couldn't get up the driveway.
Okay.
So they just turned around. They thought, oh, it must have been a hang-up call. Well, little did they know. On the morning of December 26, 2007, so 2 days later, around 8 a.m., 911 operators received another phone call.
From the house?
From a frantic woman named Linda Thiel, coming from the house.
The call's from inside the house.
Yes. What movie is that from?
It's from that old kid's book. Remember the kid's story? Like the stories tell in the dark. It's like, check the children.
Shut up.
Children.
I don't want to think about this.
Check
stop it.
The children.
You know, my friend texted me the other day. I remember growing up, we would always tell each other scary stories. And like her aunt had told us a story about like people can lick hands too. Have you heard that
one? Oh, I love that one where it's the dog, but yeah. It's really the dude. People can lick hands too.
And so they told me that. This is probably an embarrassing story. I don't know if I'm going to publish this. They told me that. And then I was like in first grade when they told me that. And I peed my pants. I was terrified.
I remember hearing, and
that
I don't
was
even
terrifying.
I don't remember how it went, but do you remember the green glass eye story?
No.
Oh, it was like, I think the green glass eye story is the Check the Children story, because it's the dad. It ends up being the dad who killed them because his green glass eye is left in the bloody spot on the kid's bed. I don't remember. I love that. I just watched a bunch of like Halloween story anthology movies last week, and they're all pretty bad. I'm not gonna lie, but. Bad in the fun way where it's like it's really cheesy and
yeah.
Sorry, keep going. You were telling a story.
Okay.
I think.
So, on the morning of December 26, 2007, around 8 a.m., 911 operators received another phone call from a frantic woman named Linda Thiel. Linda was calling from the home of her friend named Judith Anderson in Carnation, Washington. This is about 30 miles northeast of Seattle.
They have a very nice farmer's market.
It's just a cute little farm town.
It's a sweet little farm town that's not, you're not too deep into the like,
yeah,
part of Washington yet.
Yeah. So Linda told the 911 operator that she went to the home of Judy and Wynn Anderson when Judy did not show up at her job at the post office in Carnation. Judy was faithful to her job and always showed up, and like she'd worked there for many years. So it was just strange to her when Judy never showed up for her shifts. Linda told the operators that Judy was her best friend, and when she wouldn't answer her phone, she became concerned. As Linda got to the home, she noticed that the door was unlocked, and she opens the door a bit and calls out for Judy, doesn't get a response. Linda opens the door a little more, even wider, and calls once more for Judy. She looks down and she sees a man lying on the ground. Linda found the bodies of two adults and one small child on the floor, right at her feet.
Was one of the adults her friend?
Not
Judy?
Yet.
No.
Wait,
okay.
Wait for it. Okay. So in the 911 call, Linda tries to make sense of what she sees. She tells the dispatcher that Linda is her best friend and she saw the bodies and the woman, but the woman doesn't look like Judy. At 9:30 in the morning, King County deputies arrive at the Anderson residence. Investigators soon realize that the 911 hang-up call was made on Monday was indeed coming from the Anderson's home.
God, I feel like you really need to follow up. I mean, who do I know? Because I don't do anything in law enforcement. But like, I feel like you really
you
need
should
to
follow up.
Because
yeah.
Like, you're right. Sometimes it's going to be a stupid-ass kid who's like trying to ruffle your feathers, but also it might be people dying in a house. Oh,
exactly.
God.
And when you find out what happened in the household, you are just gonna like cringe,
cry into my pants.
So when detectives arrived, they found that there were not three bodies in the living room, but four. There was a second small child who was found dead with her body mostly hidden by the body of the adult female.
Oh, so the mom was like on top of her.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah. When the officers came into the backyard, they found the bodies of Judy, who was 61, and Wayne, who was 60.
Okay, so can I make a guess? Because I don't actually know who is who in this story.
Mm-hmm.
But so obviously those two are the parents in the backyard.
Wayne and Judy are the parents, yes.
And then is it like siblings in the front?
Yes.
Oh, and they're babies. And,
yeah.
Oh,
so
God.
Wait for it. The bodies in the home belong to Judy and Wayne's son, Scott Anderson, and his wife, Erica, who are both 32, and their two young children. Olivia, who was 5, and Nathan, who was 3.
Oh, fuck, dude.
All the bodies were cold to the touch, which indicated that they had been dead for quite some time.
But no decomp at this point, right?
No.
Okay. So it could have just been like 2 days.
Yeah. And as I had mentioned before, this area is very secluded. So the mobile home is located in a rural and hilly area surrounded by woods, and homes are hundreds of feet apart, and the closest neighbors may not even see each other for days at a time.
Okay.
Investigators came to realize that on this property there were actually two mobile homes, but they're not visible from each other. Okay. The second mobile home was built near the bottom of the long, steep driveway that leads to the Anderson residence. That second home belonged to Judy and Wayne's daughter, Michelle. Living with Michelle was her boyfriend, Joe McEnroe. Although, when investigators arrived at the property that morning, Michelle had not been home. For several days, investigators combed 10 acres of woods, the two mobile homes, other buildings as well, and many cars and trailers that were on and near the property. Pathologists went to the scene four times and confirmed that the four other adults and two children were dead due to homicidal violence.
Did they know the cause of death yet?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
Crime scene detectives began to work out what happened. There were over a dozen police cars around the property, helicopters, mobile command centers, yellow police tape all around the property, and there were many other personnel at the crime scene. There were also the press with their own helicopters, trucks, and vans at location. So 3 hours later, two people driving a dark-colored pickup truck came to the scene and requested permission to enter the premises. The two people who arrived there were Michelle Anderson, the 29-year-old daughter of Wayne and Judy Anderson, and her boyfriend Joe McEnroe.
So they showed up at the
crime scene.
Crime scene.
Yep. When the two came up on the scene, neither Michelle or Joe asked what was going on or why they couldn't enter the home, and neither of them asked if the Anderson family was safe.
Oh, that's sus, yep. Baby.
So immediately, Michelle and Joe were then separated and interviewed by detectives. Mm-hmm. And this is what they learn. Michelle and Joe both stated that they decided to drive from Carnation, Washington to Las Vegas to get married on December 24th, 2007.
Oh, one night before the hang-up call, conveniently? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. No, that was the day of the hang-up call.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, so yeah. It was because it was the... Right. Christmas Eve. Yeah. Okay.
They outlined how they broke the news to Michelle's parents on the morning of the 24th. Michelle and Joe claimed that Judy and Wayne were really happy about Michelle's decision and that they told detectives they knew the family had planned to celebrate Christmas on the 24th with Michelle's brother Scott, his wife Erica, and their two children Olivia and Nathan that same day. Although Michelle and Joe were questioned by detectives about their story, and they both then broke down and admitted that the trip to Las Vegas was a story that they had planned out in anticipation of being questioned by the police. So it wasn't even true. They didn't even go get married. Well,
that's like an admission of guilt. Like,
yeah. Right? Yeah.
Right there.
Then they both proceeded to give lengthy confessions about the murders of Wayne and Judy Anderson, which both coincided with one another.
So one of them killed Wayne, one of them killed Judy?
No.
Wait. Okay.
They just both decided to give their confessions. They broke down, told the truth.
Okay.
So they both confessed to murdering Scott Anderson also and his wife and their two sweet babies, Nathan and Olivia.
Jesus Christ. Why?
So Michelle told detectives that her brother, Scott, owed her a lot of money. Michelle claims that she had given Scott over $40,000 over a long period of time. They were be very close before Scott and Erica got married, but so the kind of these two factors and she hated Erica.
Okay.
So these two factors drove the two siblings apart.
Okay.
Like the money owing and then just
and then hate. Not liking the sister-in-law. Yeah.
Okay. So Michelle was also upset with her parents because they would not support her in her conflict with her brother, and Judy and Wayne wanted Michelle to start paying rent for the house that Joe and Michelle have lived in for about over 6 months. Like, wow. How dare they?
Oh, how dare your parents ask their adult children to pay for rent to their house?
So she told detectives that she and Joe both owned handguns, and her gun was in a semi-automatic, and Joe owned a revolver.
Okay.
So on the morning on the afternoon of December 24th, 2007, Joe and Michelle both loaded their guns and drove up the hill to their parents' home and confronted them. One report says that Joe was in the back of the house with Judy to distract her, but another mentions that Judy was just in the back wrapping gifts with Joe. You know, they're just chatting, but maybe sure. It's a little bit of both. When Michelle fired her first shot, her dad, she missed. Judy and Joe came into the living room where Michelle and Wayne were, and Joe shot Wayne in the head.
So he did kill some of them.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah, he helped.
Okay.
Judy began to scream. Joe shot Judy once and she fell to the floor, still screaming. He walked up to Judy, told her he was sorry, and shot her again, but this time in the head.
Oh my God.
These are like ruthless.
It's her family.
Yes.
I don't always get along with my family, but man, I would never. Yeah.
Michelle then dragged her mother and father's bodies out of the house with the help of Joe, and they hid the bodies behind the shed, which is located in the backyard.
Oh, God.
Michelle and Joe attempted to clean up the blood from her parents' bodies with towels and rugs and dispose of the evidence so that when Scott and the other rest of the family got home, they wouldn't see it or, like, know what happened.
Jesus Christ.
This is all happening on Christmas Eve.
These Christmas bitches.
The two had planned on confronting Scott when he arrived at his parents' house that evening. When Scott arrived at the home, she did just that. Scott walked into the home, took off his boots, and placed them at the foot of the couch. Michelle reports that she then pulled out a gun and Scott charged at her.
Well, I mean, duh. Yeah. Like, what else? He's gonna be like, "Oh, sis, please, okay, yeah. Sis, put your guns away. We're all friends here."
Yeah. So Michelle reports that she then pulled out a gun and Scott charged at her. Michelle shot her brother as many as 4 times, but at least 2, and one of those shots fired hit him in the neck. Michelle then went after Scott's wife, Erica, who was shot twice. Erica, despite being shot 2 times, crawled over the back of the couch and called 911.
That was the hang-up call.
That was the hang-up call.
Oh, fuck, dude.
Because Michelle had ran out of bullets, she told detectives that Joe went to finish Erica off.
Oh, my God.
Joe tore the phone out of her hands and allowed her to huddle with her babies, Olivia and Nathan, before he shot Erica in the head as she was pleading with him not to shoot her.
I hate this.
Erica said to Joe, "You don't have to do this." Joe responds, "Yes, we do."
Like, with your little babies. Ooh, I don't want to. I hate it.
Oof. The Seattle Times reported that on the call, Erica could be heard screaming, "Not the kids, no."
Oh, and they didn't hear that on the hang-up call?
Yeah, I guess not.
Oh, my God.
I guess, like, in hindsight, like, they didn't pick it up, but after you went to re-listen to it over and over again, you would have picked that up in the...
Fuck.
Yeah. After Joe shot Erica, he shot Olivia in the head. When he looked at Nathan, he noticed that Nathan was holding up the batteries that Joe had torn out of the home phone moments before. Joe told detectives that Nathan had held up the batteries in one hand and gave Joe the look of, quote, the look of complete comprehension, as if he understood what was about to happen.
I fucking hate this.
Joe then fired one last bullet through baby Nathan's head.
Oh my fucking God.
Nathan was still clutching Erica's chest when they were found, and Olivia was huddled underneath Erica's body for safety. This is awful.
I don't know why, but I hate this one more than, like, anyone that we've talked about.
It's like your family.
The description of it is so intimate and brutal, and I hate it. We consider her the female killer, right?
Yeah.
But she didn't end up... The only person she killed was her brother, right?
Yeah.
Technically.
But she shot at her whole family member. Like,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It was her idea.
Sure.
It was her thought process.
I'm just
it
thinking, like legally wise.
Oh, they were both considered.
Okay, good. Good. Okay. Oh, my God, dude. Yep. Oh, I hate it.
So that night after the massacre, knowing that the police had been called, Michelle ran down to the bottom of the driveway and had locked the gate. So that's what prevented police officers from
getting
up
through.
In the interrogations, detectives asked Michelle why she killed her entire family. Michelle responded that she had been planning on this for weeks because she was tired of everyone stepping on her. She was mad at her parents and her brother, and if the problems had not been resolved that day, she fully intended on killing everyone.
What a fucking bitch. God.
When asked about Nathan and Olivia, Michelle told detectives that Joe had to kill the kids because she just couldn't do it.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
You're so tender-hearted.
Such a sweet lady. But according to Michelle, the kids had to die because she did not want them to live with the memories, and that she also did not want to have any witnesses.
Dude.
Detectives asked Joe why he shot Erica, Olivia, and Nathan in particular, and Joe said that 3 consecutive times, word for word, "I did not want... them to turn us in. I did not want them to turn us in. I did not want them to turn
Jesus
us in."
Jesus fucking Christ, dude.
Crime scene investigators were able to determine that all the casings found of the scene were consistent with the 2 firearms that had been described by Michelle and Joe. Medical examiners were able to indicate that Wayne was shot 1 time to the left temple and Judy was shot 2 times with 1 bullet to the left temple. Nathan was also shot one time to the left temple. Scott, Erica, and Olivia were shot multiple times each to the head and the body. So despite the immediate confessions, this case dragged on for years. It wasn't until 2014 when Joe and Melissa's trial would begin.
Jesus.
On March 4th, 2016, Michelle Anderson was found guilty of 6 counts of aggravated first-degree murder. She was sentenced to life imprisonment without the possibility of release in 2016.
Is she in the Women's Washington State Penitentiary in Purdy?
Mm-hmm. It was reported that Michelle showed no reaction or remorse when the verdicts were released and read in March, and she looked down at the table in front of her and just stared.
Ew, I hate her so much. I hate him so much. They're fucking evil sons of bitches. Ugh.
At first, Michelle faced a death penalty for the murders, but the King County prosecutor, Dan Sattersburg, took the death penalty off the table in the summer of 2015 after two different juries declined to impose death sentences in two other capital murder cases, one of them being Joe's. Neither of them got death penalty. Joe's defense attorney paints Joe as the one who is mentally ill and manipulated by Michelle, who is the real mastermind behind these murders. Which... I think she is the mastermind behind the murders, but he was there.
Competent.
He knew exactly. He had competent. All faculties. He knew what he was doing.
You can be mentally ill and still be competent to stand trial.
Yeah.
That's not fair.
At the stand, Joe says she had a lot of anger and a lot of hatred, and she thought the best way to act on that was to go off and kill people. I was really her attack dog when this stuff happened because I did it because I thought I had to do it. That's just big eye roll. Like, okay.
Yeah, okay. Nobody has to do anything.
No.
No one makes you do. Ugh, I hate it.
On December 19th, 2014, a 16-member jury was selected to hear the case against McEnroe. On March 25th, 2015, the jury found Joseph McEnroe guilty of aggravated first-degree murder on all 6 accounts. On May 13th, 2015, Joe McEnroe was sentenced to life in prison and avoided the death penalty. McEnroe is currently in prison in the Washington State Penitentiary, and Anderson is currently in prison in the Washington Correction Center for Women.
God, I kind of feel like someday we should go visit there because, like, a bunch of the people we've talked about are in those two prisons.
We should go interview them.
Oh, I don't want to talk to her. I hate this one. I hate this.
Was awful.
I mean,
just,
I hate all
like,
of them.
They're
like
the brazen, just not a shred of care for your family.
No, and the entitlement to be like, I'm gonna kill them because they're making me pay rent on
and
the
they,
house
and my brother owes me $40,000. Like,
first of all, you're always allowed to not give people money.
Yeah,
it's hard when it's your family, but you want to know what, if it's gonna lead to you being so resentful that you kill them, don't fucking do
and
it
and your niece and nephew.
That's fucking there's no rationalizing this. Like,
no.
That is just so fucked up and so awful. And I hope she rots. Is there any updates on, like, what's going on with them or what's going on with her in prison?
No.
I just hate her, and I hope she gets shivved. Well, Misty, well, that was the just,
was
I just
shitty.
Absolutely fucking hated that.
Yeah, me too. That was not fun to research anyway, like, as well.
Ugh. I don't know why that one is so, I don't know if it's because I'm close with my family or, like, what, but that one...
It's just brutal. It's really...
Yeah, and, like, I think about, like, my little niece who, like, I literally would die for, and I can't imagine,
like, just...
somebody being so brazen and evil. It makes me so sad.
And Joe just, like, followed along with it. Like, he just...
Yeah. I mean, that's just fucking tragic, but...
He just didn't care. He said... I know that Nathan had looked at me and he knew exactly what was going to happen.
He had comprehension in his eye.
And I'm going to shoot him. I'm still going to continue to look at that 3-year-old boy and shoot him. Like, I don't get it.
It's this goddamn. Yeah. Well, if you want to keep getting bummed out by us, you can follow us on Instagram at
Death in the Northwest Podcast.
You can, you know, go on our Facebook page.
I'm like,
I guess.
Really bummed out.
Me too. You can go on our Facebook page, which is Death in the
NW
Podcast. You can email us at
Death in the NW Podcast at gmail.com.
I feel
feel like we need to have this written out so we can.
I know, because we always
we forget it. We already forgot the Instagram. What else? Up the Instagram
we
one.
Did Instagram. We did Gmail. We did Facebook. And follow us on all the different places that you listen to your podcasts. Yeah. So Stitcher and Apple Podcasts and Breaker Spotify and Breaker.
Anchor, Breaker. 1, 2, 4.
Google Podcasts. And
all that shit.
I don't even. I'm just like, this one just bummed me out.
I know.
Real hard.
I'm about to go drink a whole bunch of wine.
Yeah, I know. It's my turn to record now. Mama gets to get hammered.
I know. I'm going to go cuddle with my cats while you. Oh, my goodness. So, what? You listen to the Morbid episode where.
Dybbuk Box?
No, not that one. But, it was the one about the man, the serial killer, the newest one.
Yeah, the Frankfurt yes. Serial killer.
So in that first episode where he said he had stuck under the house and he sliced the cats up and I hated it. And I held my kitties on so tight that when I was listening to that episode, I'm like, oh my god, the poor little babies.
Look at how cute they are.
They're so precious. How could you hurt like these little.
Even that one is pretty cute. Like,
okay, Finn is adorable. He knows you're talking bad about him.
Until you get your fingers near him, he's one of the best looking cats I've ever. He's very good looking man. He's a
very handsome man. Yeah. And look at this little pepper. Right
that
here.
One I just can't. That one I literally want to steal.
Like,
from
who would break into my house and decide to kill my kitties?
Oh God! Again, don't. This is just buzz. This is such a buzz.
This is such a buzzkill.
All right. Should we say bye?
Yeah. What are we gonna do next week though?
Should we do songs inspired by murders in the Northwest?
I like that idea. Yeah, let's do it. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. Peace.
Bye.